and welcome to another thrilling episode of Truth and Reconciliation. It's the Pelwood Fantasy Football League podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It's great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
I tell you what, Seth. I could only be doing better were it not for Arian Foster's Achilles and his status of being out for the rest of the year. Other than that, fantastic.
Sure. Well, you just gave me a routing. And Arian Foster, notwithstanding, he still managed to put up nearly 30 points for you in the agenda of kick Seth in the butt before he sidelined himself. So I imagine you are feeling pretty good. Congratulations on your 77 or so point victory over me this week.
Yeah, just imagine if Lamar Miller had played the second half.
If only. If only he wasn't done by the end of round two. Man.
Well, we'll move on from that, Seth.
Okay.
We'll move on from that.
Yeah.
I'm excited, though. We have a guest with us today.
What?
Always love having a guest on the show. You said you weren't going to do that.
Oh, yeah.
This makes our fourth guest from the lead this year.
That's right.
And a great time to have him on. He is the holder of the runner-up title from the last 2 years. Having grabbed second place the last 2 years in the lead, losing the championship game. He is currently in fourth place this year, overall second in the incumbents division. Mm-hmm. He just lost by 1.4 points last week. He made a big trade this week.
That's right.
He's playing against the top team in the league. He's our boy, Ben Felker.
Welcome to the show, man. Great to have you here.
What an intro, dude. I felt like Tiger Woods there for a second.
We hold you in that high of regard.
If only that were true. I appreciate it, though.
Well, Ben, you are having a bit of an up and down season this year. Would you like to comment on your presence in the league thus far?
Man, I felt really good about my draft, and
it's funny how when you stay for the whole thing, you know,
it's amazing.
There's a correlation. You know, it was exciting, but. Nothing will compare to drafting the top three quarterbacks in the league and somehow
still coming out
somehow managing to make it to the championship game.
Yeah,
we really failed as a lead that year.
I don't know what we were doing.
Giving you good enough trades.
We needed quarterbacks. They were all taken.
That was the most exciting fantasy football season for sure. I've ever been a part of.
How are you feeling coming off last week? Tough loss.
I think the thing that got me was TJ Yeldon, on the bench. They had the 9:30 London game, and he was supposed to be out all week. And I did not get to my computer in time to insert him into my starting lineup. But with him playing, I would have won. 1 point loss is very hard to deal with.
Indeed.
Especially at this point of the season.
However, you're still in a good spot. You're 4-3 along with five other teams in the league right now. Four other teams. Yeah, there's five teams total sitting at 4-3. So you are in a playoff spot. You do have the most points scored out. The second most points scored out of those 4-3 teams. So you're still in a very good spot. However, you are going up against Brent this week, which is always a tough matchup.
Which is why I felt like I needed to make a move.
Indeed, and a move you made. Big trade going down today, as a matter
of
fact.
Huge trade.
Seven players involved overall. What? Give us a breakdown of the genesis of that trade. Who asked who? How did it evolve?
Well, I've been working on a couple different scenarios. One started last week, and it was actually with Seth.
Imagine that was a very cordial and professional interaction throughout.
It was.
Tell us what happened there.
Well, we'll just say that it was very cordial and everything was going smoothly. And then I felt the need that I, for some reason, had to call Seth and make sure that he was doing okay and still had a pulse.
Sure.
Because it just disappeared off the face of the planet. But that's okay.
That's right. No, I did do that, and I make no excuses. my phone did die, but not before I went to some of my consultants, some fantasy football influences that I keep close to the chest.
Right.
That includes my, of course, my friends Peter and Brent, who I probably got caught in my trap of playing the field. and
it happens.
Yep. But also to a little bit of Fantasy Pro research and doing the numbers, and saw that it might be an unwise move up against me in the long run.
So these were all thoughts to yourself.
Right. No, they'd never made their way back to you until our trade expired. Nope.
Nope.
Now why would you not give the man a solid nope, not gonna work out? Why just let him dangle like that, Seth?
Well, on the day of,
give a yes or a no.
No. There's again. I was trying to not make excuses. On the day of, I did indeed enjoy the back and forth and back and forth, and in fact, it was such a cordial exchange where we were both looking out for each other for the most part, but we both wanted to see certain outcomes, and it was quite a bit of, hey, let's not be brass here, but let's also work to the best of means and ends. Nothing that was ever really stated to my mind was unfair to the point of an insult. I speak for myself on that. Ben, would you agree with that statement?
Totally would agree with that, yes.
So we had
which is why I was so caught off guard.
Indeed, no. In fact, it's probably why the dagger hurts more. is for the expectation to be so.
You know, it had me questioning our friendship. You know, I was hoping that, you know, okay, well, I don't care about the trade anymore. I at least would hope that, you know.
So it sounds like y'all did some pretty solid flirting at the bar.
Yeah.
And you're both into it. And you, yeah. Maybe went on a first date. Yeah. Had some good conversation.
Oh, man. Right, and
everyone walked away from it feeling good.
And I'm throwing up some huge quotation marks right now. My phone died.
I'm sorry, Ben. We're not able to get the video broadcast in. We're unavailable to confirm such air quotes or not. So we're just going to have to go ahead and say, you know what? I will. Here, let me get on the podium for a moment, if I may. I preach within our league. In fact, at this this medium that we have here through the Truth and Reconciliation podcast, which reaches far and wide, I preach to this audience of many that trade negotiations within fantasy football are both a measure of a manager, but also a measure of that manager's conduct and gentlemanly state. And so, here I have preached something strong to this choir that says, hey, you must hold high regard for these negotiations. I understand the mudslinging. I understand the tactic that is trying to either bamboozle an opponent or possibly convince him of something that's not good for him. But ultimately, I believe in the kind of the George Washington tactic of negotiation. We will be gentlemen. And in this case, what started out as a pleasurable, yes, that's right, pleasurable interaction.
Very interesting.
I'm glad you restated that.
I failed to hold up my end of that expectation, and Ben, for that, I'm sorry.
You are 100% forgiven, sir.
Well, Ben, you ended up with a fallback option. You found something else to take home with
yes.
you instead.
So it was the same cordialness. I texted Andy last night. I said, Andy, let's make a trade. Let's do this.
That man's a gentleman.
And a scholar. Yes, yeah. For sure. But he thought that I was trying to bamboozle him at the first offer. And come to find out, he had just had a very long day. So he'll get back to me in the morning. And ended up going with it, threw in an extra player on my side to give to him, and we ended up doing it.
Good stuff. So the core of the deal, the big players, you traded away Dante Moncrief and Jimmy Graham, and Andy sent back Emmanuel Sanders and Martellus Bennett. Now, you made an interesting move of also acquiring Torrey Smith from Andy and immediately dropping him.
Instant.
which I think was a wise move, because my gut reaction to the analysis of the trade was, well, Andy is not the one who acquired Torrey Smith, so he won the trade.
Correct. I mean, wait. I think it was a good trade for both of us. Andy was needing some depth, and I was literally just trying to solidify my core group of players so I can make a strong playoff push.
What I think was really interesting about the deal for you, it wasn't so much about I feel like you didn't really improve at a particular starting, you know, your starting lineup didn't really improve as far as talent goes,
mm-hmm.
but you diversified because mm-hmm. you had Marshawn Lynch and Jimmy Graham, you know, both red zone weapons for Seattle, and you had T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief,
yep.
both wide receivers for the Colts. So basically what you're doing was, I don't want to have both these guys from the same teams.
Right.
Because there's some cannibalism that happens every week. Between the two guys, get rid of that headache. Get equal talent, but diversified. Which, you know, any investment portfolio manager would be proud of the move for you.
It's made for a very interesting season, because you go into each game just like, who's going to get the touches in the red zone, both from the Seahawks lineup and the Colts lineup. So I was like, I need to get rid of this just for my own not wanting gray hairs sake.
Indeed.
So you're going to rub that in now? You're going to choose to rub in the fact that you have hair in this moment after we've had such a gentlemanly interaction?
We agreed not to speak of that. I forgot.
It's a good thing your video feed isn't working right now.
Yeah,
without a doubt, you have the finest hairline of any guest we've had on this podcast.
Or none.
Yeah. Yeah, I consider that the championship trophy. I don't need to win any more games.
Well, if that's the case, would you be willing to send me Emmanuel Sanders?
Yes.
Okay, good.
All right. Oh, you heard it here. Deal is done.
Something for nothing.
There is no way anyone would ever back out of a trade between Seth and Ben. No, sir.
Wait a minute. This might be a ploy. Revenge tact. Well, right. Ben, we're excited that you've engaged in a good trade. Like Pete said, I'll echo, it definitely wasn't necessarily a numbers trade as much as it was a diversity trade across your positional spots.
One thing that I did look at was the interesting part about this trade for me was getting Emmanuel Sanders, and the Broncos have already had their bye week, so now I have him for every game for the rest of the year. Dante Moncrief will have a bye in 2 weeks, so that would have given me two wide receivers on a bye the same week. And Jimmy Graham's bye is next week, I believe, and Bennett does not – he plays the rest of the season. So that was a big factor for me, too.
That's also important. Also important, when you've got two guys from the same team, those bye weeks could kill you, and they're both.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Ask Andy about that.
Makes a lot of sense. I love this trade for both of you, you know, especially now that we talked about just for the diversification for you. I like the players that Andy got and the depth that it gives him. I call it a win-win. You know, big trade, seven players. I felt like there wasn't a lot of talent being exchanged, and so this wasn't so much about the talent. This was about giving Andy depth and you some diversity. So interesting trade from that standpoint, where basically like for like players, you just each needed to shore up a certain part of the game. So I liked it. Fun.
And for all of you fantasy football players in our league out there, I am more than willing to continue the trade talks.
Hey.
Indeed. Yeah. So, you know, Brent put out a slanderous trade flowchart earlier this season. The first two steps of which were, are you trading with Pete? Then you're being screwed. Are you trading with Ben? Then you're being screwed. I hope we've established that's just not true. We're just two of the most willing, two of the easiest to make a trade with, really. When you rank the ease with which you can make a trade with the members in our league. Ben, I think you and I are right at the top.
Well, let's be clear.
To make a deal.
When you rank that is completely subjective.
Let me say this, though, because I talk with other friends of mine who are in fantasy football leagues, and they don't have the depth of which we have as a fantasy football league. I mean, we go back, how many years? 10 years now? So I look at partly, too, in making a trade. The reason why a lot of us do this league, not only because we like fantasy football, but also it gives us a chance to catch up with each other every year. And the cool thing about doing trades with you guys is it gives us a chance to, hey, let's trade this person. Absolutely. Oh, by the way, how you doing? How's everything going? So that's the fun part of it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, I mean, this year, three teams have made multiple trades, and Ben and I are two of those teams, the other one being Jared. Last year, I led the lead in trades made. Ben didn't trade as much last year. The year before, I think Ben and I were tied in trades made, leading the lead. So we're always right there at the top. Yeah, I was having to figure out what your team name was in 2013. But yeah, Ben and I both made six trades in 2013, and we're on pace for that again this year. So it is not completely subjective. My statement that we are the two of the easiest to trade with, the numbers backed it up. Look at the last 3 years. No one has made more trades than Ben and I.
Pete, can you just I can't read my team name. Can you read it for me?
It was DeMarco Polo in 2013.
What's my current one?
Show me your TDs. Show me your TDs.
Man, I felt very left out of the
team name episode.
You know what? You're right. You were slighted there. We apologize.
I just wanted to hear it spoken
correctly,
just so I can get my little chuckle. That's all.
Well,
how would you pronounce it?
I mean, once again, we're at a disadvantage.
Isn't quite right for me because it's, you know, I know it's supposed to be show me your tiddies, but I read it as TDs, and so it just doesn't roll off the tongue the way I think it's supposed to. How would you say it?
Show me your TDs.
There you go.
Yeah, it just sounds it just sounds like you drop into some weird, you know, to get the effect you're going for, you got to drop into some weird, you know, Mexican accent right at the end there. Show me your TDs.
Hey, that wasn't bad there, Pedro. That was pretty convincing.
I was about to say,
throw on the Pedro stash and start reading team names and dirty Mexican accent.
Yeah, put on a Pedro stash or grow your beard out for a month, and they're pretty much the same thing because that's Peter's about all he got.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Good times.
Well, once again, we're at a disadvantage that Ben doesn't have a camera because I'm sure he would have done a very illustrious demonstration to go with his team name had he had a camera. He might have flashed us.
You don't have an avatar on your team. You don't have an image to go along with your team name. I think you need to take a selfie to represent your team name as well.
Maybe I'll just show you guys my TDs.
Exactly. No, that's what I want to see.
Okay.
Just, you know, something that's...
You heard it here, folks.
Something that makes me not want to go to your team page when
I'm going
to
go ahead and clip that little audio sound bite out of this podcast.
You want to go to my team page to see who I can trade?
I'm going to make that like a button on our website where you can hear Peter Elwood discuss how he wants to see Ben Steedy's. Great. Looking forward to that.
I just think, you know, for the sake of integrity, the team avatar should represent the team name appropriately.
Touche.
Not only integrity, but also I think some would argue that there's some fantasy god influences that also come into play.
No pun intended. Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. Well, Ben, let's talk about your matchup this week. You're coming off of a crushing defeat after losing by just barely more than a point. It was tough, especially when you look at your IVA and what you left on the bench there, not being able to catch up with the English NFL that's going on over there. Both Peter and I have fallen victim to that this year as well. We understand that. But this week you have an even harder matchup going against Brent. You know, we have the advantage now. It's Thursday night. The New England, Miami game has already passed, and unfortunately, even though Tom Brady absolutely routed the Miami defense in a 36-7 victory, Danny Amendola did not take part in that routing.
And I was feeling very confident about him. I feel like that was my one wild card. You know, get a good solid 15 points. And I'm feeling pretty darn good about the rest of this weekend.
Sure.
Yeah, last 2 weeks he caught 7 passes and 8 passes.
Right.
Total of 42 points between the last 2 weeks. So,
yeah.
I mean,
not a bad decision.
Every reason to believe things are going the right direction for Amendola. But the New England offense is not one that is going to let you get away with looking at recent trends and
that is very true.
Believing in certain players are guaranteed items. So that was a tough one there. All of Brady's goodness went to Julian Edelman, the other small white guy, instead of Amendola this week. So tough start out of the gates for you. Going against Brent.
It could have been worse. You could have played the Dolphins defense in a strange hope that they would rally and overcome.
Mark my words, they'll be my D the rest of the year. It's going to be solid. They got a good...
I'm sure they will. I mean, they got Buffalo and Philadelphia ahead. They got Dallas ahead.
Now, the one good thing is Landry didn't score a touchdown tonight, so that...
Yeah,
that
it could have been worse. He
gives me a little hope.
Put up 71 yards tonight, but didn't get into the end zone. So,
how about that guy though? Double digits, minimum of 15 points, basically. Every game this year. He's remarkable.
Out of control.
And he only has 3 touchdowns,
especially on a terrible offense.
The last 2 weeks,
he's the shining star.
Yep.
So I don't think you're down and out though. I'm looking at your matchup here, and right now you're projected about 20 points under Brent, and so your offense is built up of Big Ben on top with Marshawn Lynch, Jonathan Stewart, and the wide core. Right now you're looking at T.Y. Hilton, Odell Beckham, and Emmanuel Sanders. With Emmanuel Sanders in there going up against Green Bay, it's a wild card for you, but Odell Beckham Jr. is up against New Orleans, and you got T.Y. Hilton going up against Carolina. Carolina's defense has been stronger, but I don't think that you are down and out. Peter, what are your thoughts?
I mean, this week, no, not down and out. T.Y. Hilton is probably going to have the toughest matchup because Carolina's got Josh Norman. If he is on Hilton for most of the night, Hilton will probably do very little because Josh Norman is he's the cornerback of the year. You know, it seems like there's always one just completely shut down corner, and that is Josh Norman this year for Carolina. There's a lot of good corners this year, though, because, you know, Patrick Peterson's having a really good year in Arizona. All of the Denver cornerbacks are really good. So, you know, there's some very obvious corners you want to avoid. This week, though, you don't have any choice but to play Hilton and kind of hope he busts off a long one. So, you know, that's tough. But I like the rest – outside of Hilton, I like the rest of your team a lot. Seeing Marshawn Lynch there going up against Dallas, actually, this was something I wanted to bring up with you guys as I was watching the Cowboys game this past Sunday. I was thinking, just philosophically, would you rather your fantasy interests be aligned to your real-life NFL fandom interests, or would you rather them be opposed? So in this case, your fantasy interests, Ben, are opposed to your Cowboys fandom interests in that you want Lynch to have a really good day, but you also want the Cowboys to shut him down. It just depends on if you're talking real life or fantasy. So would you rather be aligned or opposed? Because if you are opposed, then you kind of did something positive either way. Whereas aligned, you're just all in. You're either going to be really happy or really bummed.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know. I told my dad I'm starting Marshawn Lynch, and he almost disowned me. What? You're starting a player against the Cowboys? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, dude, this is my number one running back. What am I supposed to do?
And he's probably going to have a really good week. Cowboys' run defense has struggled the last few weeks, so he's probably going to be really good this week.
I think the only thing is Marshawn Lynch can't intercept Castle, so.
Yeah, well, he won't have to. The Seahawks will do plenty of that on their own.
Right, so that has nothing to do with Lynch, so I'm okay with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think especially with the Cowboys being in the state that they are right now with backup quarterback and Darren McFadden starting running back, you know, they're just not – and Dez Bryant may be back this week but not fully himself. It's not a position where you're really expecting a Cowboys victory. So as long as the Seahawks are going to score, they might as well let Lynch be the one to score. Right? So.
And they have lost their last two games, so who knows? We may have a chance. Well, holding out hope.
So right now, Brent has the Texans defense up against Tennessee, and that's probably a pretty good matchup there. He's got Mike Evans in. Mike Evans is coming off of a huge weekend.
How did that feel?
Oh, it felt fine. I knew he would at some point. And Brent, that's why Brent made the trade with me, that he knew he'd come back. But I needed the payoff now and not later because I was on my way to a pretty negative record. So I took the risk, and it paid off for me per se. But it's not like I was wishing I had him back now because my record is what it is. So, but Travis Kelce is doing well. Jarvis Landry, like we said, he's been doing really well, but he did not get a touchdown tonight, so that helps you. That goes in your favor, Ben. I love Keenan Allen this week up against Baltimore. Julio Jones is up against Tampa Bay, and Danny Woodhead is up against Baltimore. So overall, and I'm looking at Andy Dalton, and he's up against Pittsburgh this week, so that means that they'll likely have another strong game. Le'Veon Bell up against Cincinnati. That's probably your biggest issue, I think, is that Le'Veon Bell may go off this week.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that I can somehow cancel that out with Roethlisberger.
Maybe so.
Yeah, I mean, I think this would be a really tough win for you this week.
Big time, for sure.
You know, I don't really see any obvious holes in Brent's lineup this week, but
How does that feel?
I mean, he's got Chris Ivory on and Stephon Diggs on his bench, and those are both startable players on nearly every team in the league. So, you know, that he's got depth to go along with a very strong lineup, which, you know, just looks stronger after Mike Evans finally does what Mike Evans was supposed to do all year last week. But not looking at just this week, but looking at, you know, your team for the rest of the season, Ben, it really looks very strong because you've got T.J. Yeldon on bye this week. You know, DeSean Jackson maybe come back from injury at some point. And the two trades that you've made this year, you've acquired Odell Beckham and Emmanuel Sanders. So what started out as I wouldn't say a weak wide receiver core, but, you know, not really an upside wide receiver core is looking much stronger now. And you've got Lynch and Jonathan Stewart's coming on strong at running back, as well as T.J. Yeldon. So, and with Big Ben coming back, things are really trending up for you here. And I like your team going forward the rest of the year.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. This week's going to be a tough one, but yeah, I agree with you. The key is to make it to the playoffs, not to win every game.
There you go.
That is right.
Totally doable. Well, Pete, to answer your question regarding would you prefer to have your rooting fandom going towards or against when it comes to players versus the teams you root for? I got to say that I have been so player engrossed over the past years that, and since moving to Houston and not really latching on to the Houston Texans because the Houston Texans, I can't say that my fandom has been less team loyal than it ever has been before because I love watching certain teams for certain players, and that's what my NFL fandom has become. And so I couldn't care either way. If the Cowboys are on, I'm going to watch them because that's where home is, and I do root for them. And they're my first team to root for. But I also love watching the Broncos play, and I love watching New England play. And I'm sad to say that this year I've loved watching the Giants play because we've been through that before. But call me, you know, your dad may want to take me out back and whoop me a little bit too. But I'm just not attached to the teams like I used to be. I love watching the Cowboys, but I'm a fantasy fan.
I am 100% with you. Actually, I've always kind of been a fair weather Cowboys fan because, you know, football isn't really baseball is my sport, right? You know, football isn't really the sport that I love watching and get really into. But because of fantasy football, I really like watching it. And so, between having three full season leads and creating multiple daily fantasy lineups every week, I've got you know, I've got my fingers in many different jars here And it's hard to just root for a team. It's hard to separate, you know, my fantasy interest from my you know, real life fandom interest, especially when when it's like you're watching Matt Castle for the Cowboys. I'm not gonna get super pumped up about that.
That's the hard part, yeah.
You know, so maybe when Romo comes back, if the rest of the NFC East continues to be terrible, the Cowboys have a shot at it, I'll get a little bit more engaged with rooting for the Cowboys. But it's still, I'm kind of in a spot where I'm going to put the outcome of my fantasy team above the Cowboys almost every week. So
yeah. I'm glad we can agree on that.
I disagree. That's okay. I'll take a fantasy loss for a
Cowboys. It's
win.
Not a respectful or good place to be, really. And I feel a little sheepish admitting it, but it's not really something, you know, because when you root for a NFL team, you know, it unites you with the other fans. It's kind of like when you have your college team that you root for or whatever, you kind of feel that sense of connection, that kind of same rooting interest, and no one cares about your fantasy team. So you don't get that same connection when you're rooting for your fantasy team, but it's in the individualistic
America. Okay, so let me ask you guys this. What would make you feel better? Fantasy football championship in this league or Cowboys win the Super Bowl?
I don't know if you know what
I'm talking about. I don't think you want me to answer. Yeah, no, I'm gonna plead the fifth.
So quick by both of you.
It's an easy answer, but I don't think you want
disgustfully.
It.
Disgustfully.
Nope.
Oh, man.
All right. Okay. Well, Ben, it has been great to have you on the show tonight. We have really enjoyed, but we're out of time. I'm so sorry to tell you that.
Jeez.
We will we'll let you go as we run through the rest of the matchups here this week. But thank you for joining us, and good luck to you this week. We wish everyone playing against Brent good luck, as we hope to see the giant felled. But, you know, perhaps we should just root for Brent to win every game until the first round of the playoffs.
Sounds good. Long time listener, first time caller.
Great to have you in. Look forward to having you next time. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
Later.
Wow, we barely dodged that bullet.
Don't think we dodged it. I think we...
You think it was implicit?
We had to turn in our fan card multiple times there.
Woof. Well, if it means a W in... the Pelwood League, I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and what's worse is I'd even be more excited about, you know, winning a big tournament on FanDuel or something where you take home a couple grand. That'd be even better. So how derivative is that?
Quite. Well, Pete, let's give the fans what they're looking for. Let's get into some matchup discussion and hop over to that game of the week before too long. What do you got for us?
Indeed. So just overall league situation, looking at the standings, we're starting to see a little bit of separation.
We are.
Four teams sitting at 2-5. And then Andy's the lone team at 3-4. And then we've got the kind of the top seven teams between five teams at 4-3, myself at 5-2, and Brent at 6-1. So those 2-5 teams, not out of it yet. Still just two games out of a playoff spot, but better get busy winning or get busy rebuilding for next year. So that's where we are. So with that in mind, we'll jump to the matchup between Jared and Scott, as both teams currently sit at 2-5, desperately in need of a victory. For one of these teams, it may be curtains, and for the other, it is a shot of life for the rest of the year. So looking at Jared and Scott's team in their matchup, the big thing that jumps out here for me is that Stott's team from this point forward should be different than Stott's team has been up to this point this year, because this is the first week since week one that he will have Dez Bryant and Alshon Jeffery in his starting lineup, assuming Dez plays, which is no guarantee, and it's no guarantee he plays at full strength. But from this point forward, without re-injury, he's got those two guys, and that is a big change for his lineup. Makes his team look much better, as he has to this point been the lowest wide receiver point producer. That's nice to have those two horses back in his lineup.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm looking at this matchup though, and I'm having a hard time making a pick. We've got a potential point division. Right now, we've got Jared projected to be about 24 points lower, according to the ESPN projections. I'm not sure that's true. We had Rishard Matthews do some damage this evening, even though they got crushed. He was able to put up 62 yards. Jordan Cameron not able to do nearly as much. But we got the Rams defense going up against San Francisco. I think that is going to be a stronger matchup defensively than the Seahawks going up against Dallas this week, even though...
Those might be the top two defenses this week.
Yeah. No doubt.
And so that might be an even draw there. It probably just depends on which one of them scores more touchdowns, because they're both going to get the sacks and the turnovers most likely.
Yep. My prediction is that the Rams will do better against San Francisco, that Dallas has some stronger options against the Seahawks. So we'll see. I agree with you in that move that he's made. It's going to look different. He does have some of his, I'm talking about Scott, does have some of his larger point producers like Alan Hearns sit on the bench on bye this week, but ultimately they are fighting to the death here.
So what's interesting is that right now you're right, 24 point difference in the projection, which would favor Scott, because we haven't seen an underdog that large win yet. However, Jared has some lineup changes to make, because Vincent Jackson is not going to play almost certainly. He's likely to miss a couple weeks. His projection is currently zero. And Antonio Gates is also not looking likely to play this week, and his projection is zero. So, don't see any obvious options on Jared's bench as far as good starters for this week, but he does have two guys with a zero projection in there right now. And if you fill those with, if you find a guy who's projected for 10 points or so, this all of a sudden becomes a very close matchup, and it's a little bit of a different ballgame. So we should exclude VJax and Gates from the analysis here for Jared's team, and look at the rest of his unit. So he's got Jeremy Hill and coming off a bye week and starting to show some signs of life in the week before the bye. He may have a good week, though a little bit of a tough matchup going against Pittsburgh. And he's got Matt Forte going up against Minnesota, and Forte's been the number four running back so far this year, so good spot there. And then he's got James Jones in Denver. That's a tough matchup. Don't love that one. Yep. Defense and kicker are both in good spots. So, sure. His lineup's going to change by the time we get to Sunday. Don't love a whole lot of what's there now, but he should be able to give himself a chance going up against Scott. However, looking over at Scott's team, he's got Phillip Rivers, who is a great matchup this week. Carlos Hyde, not so much. Rashad Jennings, maybe at New Orleans. It just kind of depends on how the Giants spread the ball around between their three running backs, because Jennings didn't get much of the work last week. And then Alshon Jeffrey should have a good week against Minnesota. Dez, don't really know what he's going to do. He might end up being a decoy out there and not really be involved in the game, or he might be ready to kind of be full go. Either way, going into Seattle, tough matchup. Starts out Nate Washington in there, had a big week last week, playing from behind at Miami, but who knows if that can continue. That was like the first time he's showed up on the fantasy radar since week three, so don't know if that's going to continue. He does have Willie Snead in his flex, who I like a lot. So,
yeah, I do too.
There's no easy slam dunk here. I'm probably going to give the nod to Scott just because, I like Alshon and Snead and Rivers, better than, really anyone else in this matchup.
Yep. I'm going to have to agree with you. We'd be amiss not to go ahead and take our hats off to mourn the IR slot that is now occupied on this young man's team. Arian Foster is down for the count. It's only a matter of time each season.
Season it hurts bad. There's probably never been a fantasy stud who's more injury prone than Arian Foster. And I drafted him knowing he was going to be hurt to start the year, hoping that when he came back, he's going to be as awesome as he is whenever he plays, and that would be his one injury for the year. I was half right because he was awesome while he was playing, and then he was down again on a non-contact, just trying to get off the line from a wide receiver slot position, and you just see his Achilles just popped. It was tough to see for a guy who's so talented and yet cannot stay healthy.
Not at all. Well, good luck, gentlemen. We'll see who comes up on top between Jared and Scott. Our money's on Scott right now, and we'll see who is going to make a continued run.
Indeed, indeed. So we'll jump over to another 2-5 team, which is Michael.
Oh, okay.
Michael first, playing against Derek.
Sure.
And so Michael started this game, big underdog, going up against Derek. Now that we have the advantage of the Thursday night game behind us, Michael has got 62 points from Brady and Edelman, which both had a massive night, and he has now gone from a 39-point underdog to being a projected difference of about 19. So that's a nice gain for Michael. Unfortunately, that is the just about the entirety of his team. So good that Brady and Edelman did what they're supposed to do, but not a whole lot left in the tank as we head into the weekend. Meanwhile, Derek had four players play on Thursday night, and so he got a good game out of Gronkowski. That makes two in a row for him after kind of three not so studly weeks for him. Gronkowski did well. Tannehill did not. LaFell was okay, and the Patriots defense had a good week. So kind of an overall average performance for Derek coming out of the Thursday night game. And now he's going to be relying on just six players left heading into the weekend. So both these teams have basically fired their best bullets, biggest bullets on the Thursday night game and heading into Sunday. You gotta like what Derek has left a lot more than Michael.
Oh, gosh. Between Giovanni Bernard and Devonta Freeman, I think that there's a lock here.
Yeah, this looks like a lock as well. We'll see what Larry Fitzgerald does. He's come back to earth a little bit after his crazy hot start. We'll see if Arizona's throwing the ball much. In Cleveland, they might be running a lot. And if they're throwing it, if it's going to be Larry or Michael Floyd getting more of the targets there. But not a lot of upside on Michael's side of the ball. His best two remaining players are both for Detroit, Theo Riddick and Calvin Johnson, who have both been very good recently. But the Lions did just make a change in their offensive coordinator. So Riddick, we'll see how he gets used. He may be used differently now as he's been that pass-catching running back in Detroit. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens there. So
I don't think we still don't know anything about Niall Davis, whoever this man is. We think they picked him up off the street over there in Kansas City. We're not sure, but he continues to be handed the ball every now and then.
Yeah, not a great option there because it's really the Shark Kendrick West show in Kansas City. Last year, Niall Davis was the replacement for Jamaal Charles, but he turned out to be not very good, and they replaced him with West. So, but Michael does have C.J. Anderson on his bench, who he could plug in there for Niall Davis. That would be a good move to make. So if he does that, then he definitely is giving himself a much better shot this week. He also has the Jets defense on his bench, who are playing Oakland, and that may be a better matchup than the Giants going up against New Orleans. So room for Michael's projection to go up here and make this a little bit of a closer game. But for now, gotta give the nod to Derek. Even though Derek's put up a lower score last week than he has been in recent history, only reaching 113 points last week, but still managing to get a win. So nod to Derek, but Michael's got a shot thanks to Brady and Edelman's strong start tonight.
Yep, for sure. It's a very interesting outcome between the Miami and Patriots game that they came out within 10 points across six different players, 4-2. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and Derek's projected total basically did not change, whereas Michael's went up by 20 points. So big swing in Michael's favor there.
Yep, well, we'll see what happens once again. Let's hop over to the other team clinging for life, shall we?
Yep. So, Seth, you are the other 2-5 team in desperate need of a win this week. You're going up against Andy, who had a lot of bye week pain last week. Most of that is behind him, and he is just about fully staffed this week while you are missing DeMarco Murray from your lineup. Right now you're projected – neither of you had a player play tonight, which is nice. Did a clean slate here. You're currently projected down by 8 points. How are you feeling going into this kind of must-win situation for yourself?
Not great, to tell you the truth. I think that I'm looking at a with Aaron Rodgers up against Denver, that's going to be very interesting. He's got Justin Forsett up against San Diego, and so he's got a lot more favorable matchup just at first glance than I do. I think that with both of my running back and my wide going up against Carolina this week, that hurts me. I've got a Greg Olsen is going up against Indianapolis, and so ultimately, you know, having the Cardinals defense is to my favor, but I think that where my main positional needs are, I'm going to struggle.
Yeah, so the players I really liked in this matchup is Justin Forsett and Mark Ingram for Andy at running back. I like both their matchups this week. I think they'll both do well. Aaron Rodgers against Denver, that is very interesting because Denver's defense has been very, very stout. Mm-hmm. But Rodgers coming off a bye week, and Green Bay is the favored team there. So we'll see what happens. Dante Moncrief at Carolina. If Hilton is blanketed by Josh Norman, that may open up opportunities for Dante Moncrief or for Andre Johnson, which would favor you. So that might be a swing part of this matchup, is depending on which one of those guys gets the looks if Hilton is not available for luck to target. I do like Greg Olsen at tight end for you against Indianapolis. That should be a beneficial matchup there, and I like Eli Manning as well on the road at New Orleans. He should be throwing a lot in the dome. It should be a good spot for Eli Manning. So, you know, not a lot to love with either of these matchups, but there's an equal amount to like.
Yes,
so
sir.
Don't count yourself out. I also like that you've got the Cardinals defense. At Cleveland, I think they will. There'll be some interception hounds for Arizona going against Cleveland. So yeah, I think you've got a good shot at this. I don't know if I feel strongly enough to make a call about who's going to win this one, but probably need to give the nod to Andy just because, you know, having that running back core at Forsett and Ingram, I think they'll both got a chance at 15 to 20 points. That, you know, that's a good foundation to build off of any given week.
Yep. Well, I'm of course hanging in there. I can't go against myself the week that I need it the most. So I'm gonna put the flag up for a victory on my side. But I know that it's a very risky and very challenging week ahead.
Very good, sir. All right, next up, we've got Brian going up against Brock. Both these guys are coming off of narrow victories last week. Brock won by 5 points thanks to a 16-point performance from John Brown on Monday night, and Brian won by 2 points thanks to Darren McFadden scoring 26 in a surprise, kind of a surprise game from McFadden. So McFadden's now in the starting spot for Dallas. Going against Seattle is a bit of a tough matchup, but that's who Brian is rolling out there. Brock currently has a bye week player in his flex. He's currently got John Brown in there at wide receiver. Probably going to have to make a change at both those spots. I think Brown is questionable, looking unlikely to play this week. So that's that's hurting Brock. He also has two empty bench slots, so he's got some waiver wire work to do.
He does.
Currently, it's projected to be a 10-point game in Brian's favor. Some of the key players here would be Brian's going with Brian Hoyer at quarterback right now. He also has Ryan Fitzpatrick on his bench, so he might make a change there. Both of those guys are probably going to have a decent week, Hoyer or Fitzpatrick, but I think Fitzpatrick's going to be the safer play. And then Brian also has Chris Johnson at running back, who should have a good game going up against Cleveland's soft defense. So I'd say the big player here is for Brock. He's got Matt Ryan and DeAndre Hopkins. Both should have very, very good weeks. And Brock needs Ryan to bounce back here because he's kind of put up two stinkers in the last 3 weeks and really hasn't had a good week since week three. So if he has a good week at home, going against Tampa Bay's soft pass defense, that will it'll go a long way in Brock's favor here. So I like, depending on what Brock fills in from the waiver wire, I think he's got a good shot at this one.
I do too. I like a lot of the players on Brian's team, but the matchup, so what concerned me the most, DMC is coming off of a couple of big wins. He's had a little bit of momentum, but he's going up against the Seahawks, so I don't think that he's going to have the same traction that he's been trying to build on. You've got Demaryius Thomas going up against Green Bay, so once again, the secondary there is going to keep him from being over the top. And then Martavis Bryant is coming off of some higher scoring weeks, especially after being out there in Arizona. Going up against Cincinnati, that might be a pretty decent matchup for him there, depending on the performance of Big Ben. So, and then again, Jason Witten up against Seahawks again, and his Broncos defense going up against Green Bay. That's a risky thing because I think that's going to be a shootout. So, all that to say, I think that player for player, I love Brian's team, but matchups this week are what's going to hurt him. So I think if Brock fills the spots that he needs to with some decent options, he has a really decent chance of going out on top.
Yep. All right. Good stuff. We have now covered five of the six matchups.
That's right.
Last one is myself going up against Chris. I had a couple of guys go tonight, and Deion Lewis and Lamar Miller both got a touchdown, thankfully. Gave me a 38-point jump on Chris. I think my projected total went up about 10 points. So got some upside from those two guys there. And what's funny is going into this week, I liked my wide receivers much more than my running backs. I didn't feel very good about my running backs. So I'm very grateful they both got a touchdown. And my hope for tonight's game was that between the two of them, they would catch 12 passes. And they caught 11. So that worked out basically exactly as I hoped it would. So that's a good start to the week for me. And but I like my wide receivers this week. I've got Antonio Brown with Roethlisberger returning. I like that matchup. I like Brandon Marshall going against Oakland this week. And I like Tyler Eifert going against Pittsburgh this week. So feeling good about those particular spots of my lineup. But on the other side, Chris's running back scare me to death this week because he's got Todd Gurley, who is the kind of probably the hottest running back in the league right now. Has been awesome in the three weeks that he's played since he started the season injured, and he's got Duke Johnson, who has just caught so many passes in the last 5 weeks. He's got 6, 9, 6, 3, and 7 passes in the last 5 weeks. So. Right at six catches per game, and he's going against Arizona, so he'll probably be very involved in the offense once again, catching a lot of balls there. So not so scared about Chris's wide receivers, but those running backs, again, you know, build that nice nice foundation for a team. And you just need you know, someone like Amari Cooper to go off, which he very well could. So. I was a little bit nervous about this matchup coming this week. Still a little nervous, but certainly having some good points in the bag after Thursday night makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, and thankfully Lamar Miller got something done tonight in that touchdown that could have hurt you pretty substantially. But having nearly 40 points out of your 1 and 2 RBs gives you a decent leg up for competition.
Yeah, and I thought that New England would kind of game plan to shut him down, and they did. So I'm definitely happy he got that touchdown, and he caught 5 balls, because that I feel like, you know, scoring and catching passes were basically the only way he scored anything tonight. So very happy with 14 points going against New England. What just as I pontificate about my team a little bit more right now is looking at my bench this week. I feel like I'm going to definitely have a lot of points on my bench this week. And, I feel like the guys I'm starting are the guys that I kind of have to start and are probably, you know, the best guys to start. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, like Michael Floyd outscored Randall Cobb this week, on my bench, or even, you know, yep. Stevie Johnson, either, because some good matchups on my bench, and I think they're all projected for about 10 points. So, I feel like I'm definitely gonna have a couple guys on my bench score 20, and hopefully I don't have to regret it, when it's all said and done.
Yeah. Ronnie Hillman was really the only confusing sit that for me this week. What was your thought process for that?
He's put up 100 yards two of the last three games, but Denver just had its bye this week, and I read an article about C.J. Anderson yesterday, how he had some health issues during the year. Wouldn't say he's fully healthy yet, but starting to get healthier, and was starting to feel better at the end of their last game against Cleveland, although I think Cleveland's run defense will make anyone feel better about themselves. So I do expect Hillman to outscore Anderson this week, but I think it'll be enough of a timeshare there that I didn't want to start Hillman. Avoiding until there's a little bit more clarity to the situation about how they're going to split the snaps.
I'm with you. Well, we got some make or break matchups this week. We've got some that lean a little heavier in favor and some that those underdogs really got to perform to stay in the game. So we will see. It's definitely an interesting league week, and I am just thankful that not anyone has been eliminated yet by this week 8, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, every projected score right now is within 20 points, so we've got anyone's got a chance right now.
Yep, pretty awesome. I don't think we declared an actual game of the week. I know which one I would pick. Do you have one, sir?
I would actually, the first one we talked about, Brent and Ben, would be the game of the week for me. So
makes sense to me. That would be my call. Well, with that, dear Commissioner, let's head over to your Commissioner Power Rankings, which came out way ahead of schedule this week, especially by comparison. I am pleased to get those. Looks like you stayed up late to produce those. Is that true?
That is true. That is true. I was up, I was a little bit wired because I went was hanging out with Ben on Tuesday night. We did some bowling. We did some Whataburger. I got home, and I was all hyped up on the Whataburger. So these are some calorie-infused power rankings you've got coming at you this week.
Yeah, well, that brings me to pick my ranking of the power rankings. You had some good ones this week. Looks like you put some thought into it. I like that you threw in that Mike Evans jab at me. I like that you referenced Scott's Dark Horse team. In terms of making the run. In terms of actual movement, Andy took the biggest drop this week, dropping three positions. And so you offered the not every day you see a wide receiver with negative 1.9 points in comment to Cole Beasley's miraculous negative performance this week.
Isn't that remarkable?
It's very remarkable.
I don't know exactly what it did. I guess he rushed for 1 yard and fumbled the ball. I think that's about the only way.
I can not imagine the math working any other way, unless he had several fumbles.
He couldn't have caught anything, and so, you know, a fumble's negative two, and so he did something to get him 0.1. I don't think he fumbled twice, so so one fumble and 1 yard was his stat line. Oh.
That's remarkable.
Indeed.
Yeah, but ultimately my favorite comment this week was the one we've kind of already talked about, and that was the most accurate one, and that would be Foster, Australian for always hurt.
Indeed. Well, you didn't say it in the correct accent, though.
Oh, right. Sorry. Would you like to do the honors?
No, please.
Foster, Australian for always hurt.
There you go. See, I did my Mexican accent. You did your Australian accent. We'll call it a podcast.
Well, anything else, sir, before we wrap this evening?
Nope. Good luck to all those 2-5 teams out there. I'm not playing any of you this week, so I hope you all win.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for that. Appreciate that, especially after last week's sandblasting that you gave me. So, man, it's been a great show. Thanks to Ben for jumping on tonight. Look forward to having many other competitors. Hopefully, we'll be in a really good mood next week. We will see. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.